This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Reverend Cornish Rogers, pastor of the Calvary Methodist Church, Los Angeles. Tonight's subject, can we ever accept Negroes as human beings? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California, is the Reverend Cornish Rogers. Reverend Rogers is pastor of the Calvary Methodist Church, a congregation composed of both white and Negro parishioners. Reverend Rogers is a Negro himself. Now, if you'd like to make a comment on tonight's topic, can we ever accept Negroes as human beings, or ask a question of Reverend Rogers, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us at our national number. That's area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Now, please make that call station to station. Our national number, area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. What do you think about tonight's topic? Can we ever accept Negroes as human beings? Reverend Rogers, what is a Negro?
Well, I think a Negro is a person who has the blood of three races in his veins, really. When we talk about the Negro, we really mean the American Negro. If you would call an African a Negro, he would be offended. He would say, no, I'm an African. So that when we say Negro, for the most part, the only person who answers is an American Negro.
Well, you say the blood of three races. What are those three races?
Well, we know, and the anthropologists tell us this, that the American Negro, 80% of all American Negroes have Caucasian blood in them.
Now, that's saying something, isn't it?
Yes, and 100%, of course, have African blood in them, or Negroid blood, and another 50 to 60% have American Indian blood in them, which anthropologists believe are Orientals.
In origin?
Yes, in origin. We believe they came over through the Bering Straits from China into Alaska and down and settled the North American and South American continents.
Well, now, if a high percentage of Negroes have white blood in it, does it follow that many white people are walking around with Negro blood in them?
I'm afraid so, but you shouldn't say it so loudly.
Why?
Just 2 years ago, a professor at the University of Illinois estimated that there are some 28 million persons in this country who are Negroes and either are unwilling to admit it or don't know it.
Is this what we call a white Negro?
Well, it's not a... Not exactly. It is literally a white Negro, but not in the as a phrase that is used usually, you know.
I think, was it Faulkner who wrote Light in August, the story of a white Negro and his problems in the South?
I believe so, yes.
Well, now, our question tonight is, what is a human being, basically? You know, say, can we accept Negroes as human beings? Now, what do you think a human being is? We've talked about a Negro. Let's get to that point of a human being.
I would say, really, that psychologically, a human being is a person who has a sense of being looked at, a person who is responsive, a person we can see ourselves mirrored in.
What do you mean by mirrored
being?
In?
Pardon me?
What do you mean by a person we can see ourselves mirrored in?
It's a person we can have, a person or a being we can have empathy with, a person in whom we see ourselves mirrored.
I see. Now, do you feel that the average white American looks upon the Negro as a human being?
Well, I would say that the average white person probably, if he does not know a Negro as a person, looked upon a Negro as a race. And I think this is much of the problem here in America. We are so segregated from each other that we never get a chance to break through all of the crusts and all of the armor which separate us.
Well, now, who brings on this segregation? Is it solely the white man's folly, or is this partly the Negro's problem also, and realizing that it's a Negro problem, but to the point that does the Negro segregate himself?
Well, the Negro certainly, and all people have a tendency to segregate themselves, but their attempts at segregating themselves are not half as important or half as influential in their segregation as the structures of society are. That is, I think all of us are victims of segregation, not only race-wise, but also class-wise. We are much more segregated today as a country than we ever were in our history. I'm thinking especially of classes. There was a time when we all lived in small towns and everybody went to the school, the community school, and in the school you found rich people and poor people, white people and black people oftentimes in areas outside of the South. But today we all are living in our own segregated communities.
And only seeing that community.
And only seeing that community. We all have the same income level as well as the same color of the skin.
And I take it you're saying that this is a danger.
This is a danger. Poor people don't even know rich people anymore because they live in different communities, even if they're both of the same race. So I think that much of the segregation that has gone on has been started certainly by people, but we are kind of the victims of a sociological movement, you know, and we need to, it seems to me, step in and change that movement.
Well, how could we change it? I mean, how can we change this massive feeling that the majority of white people have that Negroes, and I'm going to use the word, are inferior, mm-hmm. and that many Negroes, I understand, feel that whites are maybe not inferior, but certainly not very desirable.
Well, I think both of them suffer from myths that are running around in our society. And the only way they can get rid of that myth is to be confronted with a real person. And this can only happen if people are, in a sense, forced to confront each other and have to come to terms with each other.
Well, now,
go ahead.
I'm wondering, do you think that the South is beginning to face its problem?
I believe so, but it's beginning to face its problems because it's being forced to face its problems. I don't think any person wants to risk himself, wants to experience pain, which are necessary parts of getting to know another person who formerly was a stranger to you. And this is why, in a sense, the situation almost has to be confronted.
Well, what are some of the myths that white people have about Negroes?
What is that?
What are some of the myths that white people...
Well, I think when the average white person who does not know Negroes or any Negroes... or not enough sampling of Negroes on an intimate basis, looks upon Negroes in the stereotype that we see in some of these old television movies.
You mean the Amos and Andy type?
Amos and Andy, the Step and Fetch It, the Negro who's afraid of ghosts and he turns white and runs away, the shiftless but good-natured, and at the same time dangerous person. It's a very strange myth that the whites usually have about Negroes. It's a myth that contradicts itself.
Well, now, how does it contradict itself? I mean,
well, on one hand, Negroes are friendly and shiftless and not to be taken seriously. And at the same time, we can't have them live in our community, and they might marry our daughters.
Yeah.
So that you find a kind of love, affection for Negroes, an attitude toward them that they are shiftless and harmless. Then at the same time, you find this deep fear of it.
Well, basically, you're saying the fear is intermarriage.
I'm afraid you're right.
All right. Now, how do you answer that question? I mean, how does a white person answer this, or a Negro person? You say the races are coming together.
Well, the first thing I always say is that races don't marry, people do. And that marriage is a private enough affair. And it's an affair in which two people consent to be married, so that it seems to me it's really nobody's business outside. side of the two consenting partners, whether they want to get married or not. Now, however, I do realize that this is a social taboo in our society. And how it started, I am really at a loss to know. I've got a few theories, but I don't think anybody can really substantiate the real reason why there's such a taboo against interracial marriage. Now, the interracial marriage that is the taboo is not with the Negro woman and the white man, but the white woman and the Negro man.
Now, give me that one again.
The taboo is against the Negro man and the white woman marrying, not so much the white man and the Negro woman.
In other words, white people are more willing to accept a white man marrying a Negro woman.
Or having any affair with her. This has almost become an American way of life. This is how 80% of the Negroes became persons of white ancestry.
Well, you're saying through prostitution, then?
Not just prostitution, just, of course, it was a mild form of rape during slavery, you see. But this has become almost a social habit. But with Negro men and white women, here is where the taboo operates. And the reason a taboo is a social prohibition, the reason for which you've forgotten, but the feeling is still there. So that, for the most part, this taboo operates in a mindless way. I have met even some of my best friends who are Caucasian who admit to me that they feel strange when they see a Negro man and a white woman together.
We're talking tonight with Reverend Cornish Rogers. He's a Negro minister. He's from Los Angeles. And our topic, can we ever accept Negroes as human beings? Our night call number is area code 313-846-6601. And we invite you to join us. Do you have a question? Would you like to talk to Reverend Rogers about this problem? What do you think about Negroes and whites? What do you think about intermarriage? After all, you're the important person. The listener, what do you think? Reverend, yes. We were talking about this idea of intermarriage, and I have a friend, and I was discussing this with him one day, and he said, well, I might be able to agree that if people love one another, that they can get married, regardless of the race, but what about the children? And I pose that question to you. What about the children of mixed marriages?
That's a good question, because almost every Negro in this country is a child of mixed marriage. That is, I have white blood in me, I have American Indian blood in me, but because I have one drop of Negro blood in me, I am considered a Negro. This same law should operate with a person of mixed parentage. Any person who has a drop of Negro blood in him, according to American standards, is an American Negro. Now, the parents of these children should certainly recognize this, not try to have a child live in a world that is unreal to them. A world have them try to live in a white world. And it's only when the parents fail to face up to the fact that their child is a Negro, even though one of the parents is white, it's only then that sometimes there is pressure and anxiety and tension in the child.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Cornish Rogers. Our topic, can we ever accept Negroes as human beings? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Can we ever accept Negroes as human beings? That's our topic on Night Call. And our guest is the Reverend Cornish Rogers. He's a minister out in Los Angeles. And if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question of the good Reverend, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may dial us direct. And if you wish, you may make that call collect. In other words, you may reverse the charges. So let's hear from you. What do you think? Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And Reverend Rogers, we have a caller in Grand Junction, Colorado, a listener on KEXO, Mr. Mike Fuellen. Good evening, Mike. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Okay, thank you. I don't think the question is, can we accept the Negroes as human beings, but we must. If the United States is to be the leader in the free world, the citizens of the United States must have the country they claim to have, a country where every person is equal. It's the duty of the adults today to educate their children so that a human being is a human being. This education is important to both the Negro and the white child. If the parents won't educate their children to this method that the Negro and the white person are both human beings, then the schools must do it. When a child is born, it's nothing but a blank computer. And from the very start, this blank computer is programmed with the fact of life that there are Negroes, and Negroes are human beings, just like Caucasian people are human beings. It's all right. If the parents won't program this information into their children, and some won't, that's a fact, we must program these facts into the children in the school. This way, the child never has the chance to feel differently toward racial matters and will accept these facts that Negroes and Caucasians are both human beings, and they are equal, and they are.
Mike, are you a school teacher?
Please?
Are you a school teacher?
No, I'm a student at Mesa College.
I see. Well, now, Mike, you're suggesting one thing here. That if the parent doesn't program, as it were, racial understanding into his kids, that the schools must do it. But what if the schools are doing it one way and the parent is going the opposite tack? Isn't this going to create sort of a monster as far as the intellect is concerned?
You're right, but it has to be done. And somebody has to do it. And the schools are just going to have to do their best to do this. And they'll have to check into these matters if the student isn't getting along well in this program of racial equality. There'll be some need to check into the parent's background and what they feel about it and have a talk with the parent. It'll be able to be worked out.
Reverend Rogers, would you like to comment about schools? I think you may have something to say about what's happening in our schools as far as integration is concerned.
Well, I think that that's certainly a person's education is crucial here in this area. His education, however, is not merely in the schools, but as the gentleman noted, in the home also, and indeed in the community. And I think that if the school fails to educate, and if the parents fail to educate, the child will just have a harder time being educated by life itself, because the child will be forced to confront life. Just as he is a part of a nation that has to confront all the other nations in the world. And I think it would be easier if he were taught at home. It would be a little more difficult if he had to be taught only in school.
Well, let me ask you this question, gentlemen, and I'll throw it out to both of you. Okay, I am a school teacher, and I happen to teach in a very, let's say, bigoted town. But yet I feel that racial integration is a good thing. So I get up in front of the class and announce to the students that this is what should be, you know. How long do you think I'd last as a school teacher?
Well, I'll take that. Probably, with the fathers of the town, not very long. That's why some government control of education is necessary. And protection of the teacher will be necessary here. The government will have to step in on some of these areas, just like they're doing right now, and make sure that the child is given a chance to learn this thing.
Reverend, what do you think about that?
Well, I think he's got something there. I don't know whether the government has to do it, but I think that the teacher certainly must be protected in the classroom. The teacher must be free to teach. And it seems to me that the teacher ought to be a person who is dedicated to these principles. How you effect this, I don't know, but I think we're both both after the same thing. I seriously doubt whether the government can do it by itself. We need certainly some local options here.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you for your opinion.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Mike Fuellen from Grand Junctions, Colorado, listener on KEXO. And let's go out to Baltimore, Maryland now, listener on WBAL, Mr. William Crapel. Good evening, Bill. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
I'd like to direct several questions to Reverend Rogers.
Okay, shoot, Bill.
Fine. First of all, do you, Reverend, believe that the Negro American is not equal? No, let me rephrase that. Do you believe that they're not, as your topic says, void? I have forgotten the topic now.
Can we ever accept Negroes as human beings?
Do you believe that the Negroes are not accepted?
Do I believe that Negroes are not accepted as human beings? Is that the question?
Yeah, right. That's the first part. Go ahead. You answer it, Rogers, please.
I think in some instances, yes, they are not accepted as human beings. They are looked upon as strange, exotic creatures. By some people, as people not fit, because of their race, to live in their communities. They are looked upon by some people as inferior, and this is stated very clearly and unapologetically in many parts of the South. In fact, they also insist that people who believe Negroes are equal are also inferior. I would say categorically that there certainly are some people who feel that Negroes are not human beings.
Bill, you had some other questions.
He answered my next question, too, when he said that. I was going to ask him if he thought it was all over the nation. Because, granted, in Baltimore here, we do have racial problems. In fact, actually, across the nation, you have it. But, what I mean, in the South, it's more of it. It doesn't belong down there. It's because you have people like this one governor in Alabama. Now, I'm a white person. Just like Mr. Hamilton has brought up last night. I believe it's Mr. Hamilton.
Right, Mr. Willie Hamilton.
Brought up this subject that some of his best friends are niggers.
And I think he said that whenever you have to qualify it by saying one of my best friends is a Negro or a white person, you're automatically sort of apologizing for your friendship.
I believe it would depend on the way you look at that. The reason being, because, so you say some of my best friends are Negroes, that doesn't, right away, the person is lowering the Negroes. On the person's mind, you're going to be dominant Negroes, am I right?
Reverend Rogers?
I'm afraid I didn't get the drift of that. He didn't talk loud enough.
I see. Well, basically, he's wondering about this word friend.
Yes.
You know, when you have to say I have a Negro friend or a white friend. Very seldom do people say I have a white friend, but invariably they'll say I have a Negro friend. As though, you know,
look at me, baby.
I'm a good one.
Yeah, well, I'm not so sure that this is really as bad intentioned as it seems. I think it's merely a way of speaking that we have in America because we are so race conscious. Negroes, too, have a tendency when they have friends who are white, say, I have a white friend. Just as whites who are not accustomed to having Negro friends, when they do speak of the Negro friend, says, I have a Negro friend. I wouldn't make too much of that. I think merely it's just a
saying, then.
Yeah.
Bill, did you have another question? Bill?
There was something Mr. Hamilton said last night to me, and he said last night, I can't exactly remember how he put it.
Well, if you can give me a hint, maybe I can paraphrase it for you.
It had something to do with the riots in Los Angeles.
Well, he was telling us that part of the problems of the riots in Los Angeles happened to be the way the police treated the Negro.
I know what it was, Russ. He said last night that the Negro, he was talking with another Negro, he said they should not be called blacks.
Oh, yes.
Well, when he said this, I don't know. I just got into work and I turned the radio on. My wife had it on. And when I turned it on, I picked the night call up. And this is something that's very interesting. This trouble they've been having between the Negroes and the whites.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's sensitive. But he said the Negro should not be called black. But yet the Webster's Dictionary describes the Negro as dark skin or black, if my memory serves me correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't see, does the Reverend Rogers disagree with being called black?
Reverend Rogers?
Well, it would depend upon how you said it. Now, if you would say it in a derogatory way, which clearly conveyed to me that you were trying to insult me because of my color, I would take offense. But if you said it that the black race, you know, or here all black men are like this and so forth, black as a, not a description so much of color as a description of the race, this is quite acceptable. In fact, among some racist Negroes, they insist upon me calling black men and not Negroes. The black Muslims, you see, insist upon me calling the black man. So it's not a term of derision all times. It depends upon how you use it.
Bill, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Ross, do you want one more?
Yeah, time? Surely. Go ahead, Bill.
This, as far as I'm concerned, goes for everybody. My mother was in the hospital about 4 years ago here in Baltimore, and she had about five Negro nurses, and I guess it was about an equal number of white nurses. And I believe that the Negro nurses treated her better than the white had while she was in that hospital. And as far as I'm concerned, I believe the Negro should have every white right that any other American has.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you for your opinion.
Thank you very much, sir.
Good night, and thank you for calling, Mr. William Crapo, from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. What do you think about that last statement that Bill made, Reverend? Do you think that there might have been something in the old Uncle Tom involved in the Negro nurses that they go out of their way to treat white people with some deference or a little bit more kindness?
Well, I think the Negro certainly is much more accomplished servant than whites are.
He's had more experience, is what you're really saying.
Secondly, I think Negroes oftentimes do not reflect judgment upon whites that other whites reflect upon them. That is, many whites would feel that other whites taking care of them would resent it. You see?
I see.
They don't feel accepted. They feel as if they are scrutinized. While a Negro doesn't represent any judgment at all, I find it very easy to relate to Negroes on those personal levels, you know, those intimate levels like that.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Cornish Rogers. Our topic, Can We Ever Accept Negroes as Human Beings? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
Thank you.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight on Night Call, the Reverend Cornish Rogers. Reverend Rogers is a Negro minister. He's from Los Angeles. And we're talking about the Negro as a human being. You know, what is a human being? What is a Negro? What is a white person? And if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, we'd love to have you. Our national phone number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. If you call, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601, and you can reverse the charges. So, let's hear what you have to say and let the rest of the country hear your opinion. Reverend Rogers, I have a good friend of Night Call standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. David Adams. Good evening, David. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Russ.
Your comment, David.
As a native, born, bred, South Carolinian, and a white man, I'm a bigot. Now, I'd like to know what this reverend is going to do and what the other colored people are going to do to try to change my attitude without passing a lot of laws. I don't think a person can pass legislation on morality or likes or dislikes. I was brought up in a certain tradition. I'm sorry, in some ways, for this predicament, but by instigating laws isn't going to change me. I'd like to know what he and the other colored people can do to change me, because they want to change me. I feel that colored people in general, they are the ones that tend to act like they're inferior, and it is not altogether the white man. You take, if you put oil and water together, they still are separated. They don't unite. And that is the same way it is with the colored and the white race. I think that we should, the United States and the world is big enough for both races to live in the same world without having to be chummy-chummy. And I want to know why he wants to be chummy-chummy with us.
Reverend, there's a good question for Mr.
Yeah,
Dave Adams.
Yes, it certainly is. First of all, I'd like to say this, that I don't know whether Negroes are so interested in changing other people in terms of what they believe and who they like and who they dislike. What Negroes are interested in is not that you change your opinions about them, but that you change your actions toward them. That is, Negroes want to be protected. Negroes want the freedom that other people have in this country in terms of the ballot box, in terms of public accommodations, in terms of equality of opportunity for jobs and free movement throughout the country. This is what Negroes are after. They're not after laws that will change people's hearts, but they're after laws that will change people's actions. That is, they are interested that other people do not victimize them. They're not interested primarily that other people love them, even though everybody wants to be loved, and Negroes not is no exception. Negroes are no exception there.
Dave, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
The Reverend just said that basically he just wants equal rights for the Negroes as far as, you know, job opportunities and voting, etc. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that they should be allowed to vote, but I think they should know what voting is all about. I don't think that anyone, white or black, should be allowed to go in and pull a lever for a payola. And that, I mean, is certain people in the administration now, they got this poverty program going, and that is to buy votes. And I think that is why a lot of people get in office, is because a lot of people don't know the value of voting. They don't look into the issues. They are afraid to call a congressman or the senator. They just go vote, and you know, that's a big problem.
Well, outside of voting, David, what about saying a Negro having the right to eat anywhere?
Okay.
What about the idea of a Negro being allowed to go into any restaurant? What do you think about that?
I think as long as a Negro is properly dressed and he conducts himself as a gentleman, that he should be able to eat anywhere he can afford it. Of course, sometimes I feel uncomfortable in a real swanky restaurant, and I'm white. It's just what you're accustomed to. Their customs and our customs are different, and that is where the trouble is. They're not like us, and we're not like them. And even here in Denver, they're trying to unite all the counties here and make it one big happy family, and I don't like that. I like for people to be individuals and not work as one big group, a mass. I think that we should work individually, and we should cooperate with each other, but we shouldn't have to form into one big melting pot, as they call it.
Reverend, would you like to make a comment on anything
that David
said?
I would agree with him on his last phrase, that we should not have to be one big melting pot. That is, I don't believe that we are expected, or that the goal of the civil rights movement is to have everybody so integrated that everybody looks like each other, everybody thinks alike, everybody lives alike, and so forth.
It would be very dull if we had everybody looking alike and eating the same food and doing the same thing. It would be, life wouldn't be worth living.
Well, I don't think that's the reason why we ought not to do it, primarily. I think we can all, even if we did all look alike, we could dress differently, but I don't think that's the reason why we ought not to amalgamate as such. I think the reason is that everybody is entitled to their own uniqueness. Everybody, I think we gain more in our country from the diversity of people that we have here. No one ever suggests to the Italians to give up some of their Italian festivals.
Or pizza pie.
Yeah, or pizza pie. No one ever suggests to the Irish to give up a certain that parade on down Fifth Avenue on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, you wouldn't dare. You'd get a shillelagh over your head.
And I think for the Negro, there ought to be some traditions growing up, and this is one of his problems. He doesn't have these traditions yet. There ought to be some traditions growing up which he can celebrate as a part of his past. Now, the trouble with the Negro is that he has a past he's ashamed of, slavery. And it indeed needs to be something he ought to be ashamed of, in a sense. And so he has a tendency not to have any myths, any celebrations, because he's ashamed of his past. And this is why he is so eager to become a part of the mainstream of American life, because that's the only place he can find his identity that he can accept.
David, I have to get to some other callers, but I do want to thank you for calling.
Thank you, Ross.
Good night. Mr. David Adams from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. And let's go out to Indianapolis now, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Richard Sweeney. Good evening, Richard. You're on night call, sir. Your comment, please.
Well, I was going to say something that was already discussed by this last guy.
Okay.
But I do have another question, and that is, why should people be concerned so much about the Negro's rights and or treatment and acceptance in American society when other minority races aren't given the same concern? For example, the Jews are subjected to the same sort of treatment in a lot of areas as the Negroes. There is quite so much hullabaloo about them. Is it just because there are more Negroes than there are Jews here?
Reverend Rogers, what about that?
Well, I think there are several reasons. One is the very unique relationship that the white people in America have to the Negroes. And this is a relationship which is unlike any other relationship that the majority of Americans have with any other minority. The fact that these people were once their slaves. And so there's a strange history, a common history between among the whites and the Negroes in this country, which really makes the Negro stand out in terms of minority relationship.
Well, he carries his minority around in the color of his skin more so than a Jew or an Italian or an Indian, doesn't he?
Yes. Very true. And if you take a look at the other minorities, there is an upward mobility. They're able to move into the mainstream because there is no barrier in skin color. While the Negro, he has a badge of an ex-slave forever. even if he becomes a millionaire. This means that there is a special identification for the American Negro in minority status in the country. Negroes were here long before the Irish even came, and the Irish people soon produced a president. Negroes have been here before any of the immigrants came. And all of the immigrants who've come have worked themselves up and become part of the mainstream of American life, mainly because of their color, that they were able to be accepted because of their color.
Dick, did he answer your question?
Yes, to some extent. However, it seems to me that in almost every area of human life where we have some kind of a handicap, we're usually given something to override that handicap. For example, Jews seem to be gifted in certain areas of finance, let's say.
I think that's a stereotype, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean the money lending.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they do seem to have a very good mind. Medicine also, I think they've excelled, and science. Now, the Negroes, surely they must have been given some gifts which were equal, at least after such a long period, considering that they've been here longer than all these other immigrant races. Isn't there some way that they could have overridden their color?
Reverend Rogers?
That's a good question, because really it points up the difference between the American Negro as a minority person from all the other minorities in the country. The first difference is that the Jew had a history and an identification long before this country came into being. The Jew had to learn for 2,000 years at least that he had to stick together. He had to live behind walls which were called ghettos in Europe. He was discriminated against and spat upon. He had to learn how to live within that kind of milieu. And he took 2,000 years to learn this and to learn how to beat the system. If you regard the Japanese, if you regard any of the Europeans from European countries, all of them have histories, all of them had a sense of identification, and the most important thing, all of them had strong families, which gave them their identification and carried on their culture, transmitted their culture to them. Now, the American Negro lost all of this when he was taken from Africa. He was the only immigrant who came here against his will. All the others came because they wanted to come. He came against his will. He was immediately broken up from his family. Slaves were not allowed to marry. The law did not recognize a marriage, a slave marriage. The master could sell child from mother, father, and so forth, so that there never was a family system in slavery. Because of this, Negroes cannot remember their culture from Africa or any other place. Because of this, and because of the weak family system of American Negroes today, which is a legacy of slavery, you find that Negroes don't even know who they are.
Is this why we have the high rate of Negro men leaving their wives
very true, and
illegitimacy as far as children are concerned?
That's the reason. That's precise. You see, the reason why we know that's the reason is that when we go back to Africa and take a look at the African family, it's one of the strongest families in the world.
Yes, when you get up in around Ghana, you find the mama traders, and
yes,
mama is boss.
Of course, and you find there's no such thing as an orphan in Africa.
Yes.
There's no illegitimacy in Africa, you see, which leads us to believe that where did the Negro pick this up? He picked it up in slavery, which was really forced upon him.
Well, Dick, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your provocative comments.
And thank Reverend Rogers for his informative answers.
Mr. Richard Sweeney from Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Cornish Rogers. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making
your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Cornish Rogers. He's a Negro minister from Los Angeles, and we're sort of talking about, well, I guess we're just sort of communicating with one another. We're talking what it's like to be a Negro, what it's like to be a white man. And I guess this is the big purpose of Night Call, the ability to bring people together across the country, to exchange views, to learn to appreciate, I guess, the difference that Dave Adams was so concerned about, the idea that people should be different, and that we do have different points of view, and that we can express them. And here's your chance. If you'd like to join us at Night Call, give us a call here at area code 313-84-66601. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect, so please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-84-66601. And you may reverse the charges, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Reverend, I have a caller in Indianapolis, a listener on WFBM, Mrs. Zira B. Miller. Good evening, Mrs. Miller. You're on Night Call, ma'am. Please speak up.
How are you?
Fine, ma'am. Your comment.
I was thinking, I've heard from time to time, so many times that they say if the Negro would get an education. When you stop to look and think about it, in all walks of life, if you apply them, they have educated themselves already, and they have come out of the slums and out of the slump that they were in. And there are lawyers, there are doctors, educators of all in every field, from the kindergarten to the colleges.
Then you're really saying that Negroes have grabbed themselves by the bootstraps. Is that correct?
Don't you think that they have?
Well, I think this goes back to the Reverend's original comment that because we are living in ghettos, white ghettos and Negro ghettos, that the white man never really gets a chance to meet the Negro lawyer, the Negro doctor, and the Negro teacher. Reverend Rogers, what am I answering it for? Talk to me.
Well, I tell you, sir... I was driving that they have already educated themselves and have come out of the cornfields and the cotton patches and all of those places. And now that they are taking a place in society and in other places, they are not being accepted as they were. And I'm wondering, my main thought is, why doesn't the ministers preach to the people love instead of keeping them segregated? You know, so many times we think in the Bible where it tells us if we say we love God whom we have never seen, say we hate and we hate our brother that we live with all the time. The Bible said we are a liar and the truth is not in us. And I'm wondering, why doesn't these ministers preach that love to the people?
Well, Reverend Rogers, are you preaching love?
I stand convicted. No, I thought ministers were preaching love. Unfortunately, I can't get to hear anybody on Sunday morning.
You're working.
Except myself, you know. And I certainly would hope that ministers are preaching love. I do know this, that the conscience of church people have been has been touched by the whole civil rights movement for the most part. So that for the first time in a long time, the church, at least through its ministry and some of its intelligent laymen, the church has become involved, at least sympathetic to the whole civil rights movement.
And you know, some churches have lost a lot of members because they have become active in civil rights.
Yes, and I think this is a good sign of the church, the health of the church in rough times. Now, as for Negroes who have educated themselves under very difficult circumstances, I certainly would agree with the lady that this has been done on a large scale. And I agree with you, Russ, that the trouble with it is that much of it is not known by the white community because of our segregated society. And I would think that much of the misunderstanding would be cleared up if people got to confront each other.
The thing of it is they have walked side by side in the schools from kindergarten to the colleges and then through the colleges as far as they can go in the degree, but yet they are not accepted. And I feel like that if they were preached to the love that is in the Bible, the way it is to the love of God, and I believe that they were, there would be a difference and a change, because then that would make each other more aware. I mean, that would make them, each individual, aware of this love, you know.
Well, I think we're in agreement with you, Mrs. Miller, and I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
I often wonder what the...
Well, I have some other callers.
Yes?
And I'd like to get to these other people. Would you mind?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Mrs. Miller from Indianapolis, a listener on WFBM, and we have standing by patiently Mrs. Angela Parks from Boulder, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Good evening, Mrs. Parks. You're on Night Call.
Good evening. I think that I felt like calling in order to comment partly on Mr. Adams' comments.
Right.
I think that my own motivations were set before I ever went to school to acceptance of Negroes and to a protective attitude towards his kind of attitude towards them. So I can't criticize him for being what he was brought up to be when I most certainly am myself.
We are all creatures of our environment and our upbringing, I guess.
Yes. But I have to live with Mr. Adams. He lives in this community.
Well, now, don't say that like that's a bad thing. In fact,
well, what I mean is, he wouldn't like me, and I don't like him if we are going to judge each other by our ideas.
Right.
But we managed to live together.
As human beings.
I wonder if Reverend Rogers wouldn't feel perfectly at ease in a community which had both of us. And perhaps I'd be as hard for him to take as Mr. Adams with his strictly Southern point of view.
Reverend Rogers, what do you think about that?
Gee, that's an excellent observation.
Didn't agree?
And it's just marvelous because it points up quite clearly that we live in communities with a lot of people that we don't get along with personally very well. And it seems to me that Negroes ought to be accepted on the same basis. That is, I notice when, at least in Los Angeles, in an all-white community, when a Negro wants to move into the community, there is always so much commotion. But when a white person wants to move into the community who is of the undesirable type, a few people grumble, but they accept it anyway. And it seems to me that the problem with the Negro moving into the community is that many whites feel that they have the power to stop it. While if a white person of an undesirable type moved into the area, the rest of the community knows full well that they have no power to stop them from moving in. They just have to put up with it. I think the same attitude ought to be taken toward any person moving into the area, whether they're white or colored. And people ought to choose their friends.
Ms. Parks, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and expressing your opinion.
Is there someone else waiting?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, then I'll give up. I had something else, but
Okay, thank you for being kind. Good night. This is Angela Parks from Boulder, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. And because of the kindness of Mrs. Parks, we go to Miss Ann Ford in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Good evening, Miss Ford. You're on night call.
Good evening.
Your comment, please.
I really have a statement and then a question. I would like to refer back to the Bible, stating that, of course, Adam is the original of mankind.
Right. Could you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes, certainly. Now, if Adam is the original man, how in history is it proven that the Negro came into being? Is there a historical justification for this? And if so, what is it? And I have many times heard the expression Negro blood, meaning that this blood is different. How is this explained? And when you say that all men are created equal and are from one original man, can this be explained?
Well, Reverend, you have about 2 minutes to answer that question before we have to say goodnight.
Well, I would say just in summary that there are all kinds of fanciful explanations, none of which really hold water. And I'm glad you mentioned that because it is a basic foundation of our, of at least the Bible, in terms of creation. And all of the fanciful notions about how Negroes came into being, sons of Cain, also with Noah and one of his sons, Ham, who looked upon him naked, and so forth. And all of these are just fanciful arguments for an irrational fear. And I'm glad you exposed it.
Miss Ford?
Yes?
Did he answer your question?
Partially. I know you don't have much more time. I felt that this has been such a vague point. No one has really been able to justify it. I know I've heard the expression Negro blood so many times, and when I hear it, because it cannot be proven. I feel under very deep feeling that all men are created equal, and regardless of the color of pigment of their skin, I don't feel that they're any different, and I think this is the way God's law is meant for mankind to feel about each other.
Well, Miss Ford, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your opinion.
Thank you.
Good night, Miss Ann Ford, a lady listener from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. And Reverend Cornish Rogers, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Well, thank you for having me, sir.
Tomorrow night, we continue our look at why the Negro rioted in Los Angeles, and our guest is Mae Perkins. She's a volunteer worker in a teen post. Our topic, what can adults do to help teenagers in the slums? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.